Uh-oh. You're gonna need to save ass and continue.
Esto es Comando Z,
donde el fracaso no es opcional, pero el éxito es obligatorio. Con ustedes, Lace Curbelo.
Aquí, Lace Curbelo, en otro episodio más de Comando Z Podcast. Con nosotros hoy, Alberto Soriano. Es un diseñador interdisciplinario que cuenta con una maestría de la Escuela de Arquitectura y Diseño de Oslo, Noruega. Su pasión es crear experiencias deseables y significativas para las personas y junto con ellas en todas las disciplinas del diseño. Originario de la Ciudad de México, se formó como diseñador industrial en la CIDI UNAM de México y en la NTNU en Noruega. A través de sus estudios ha encontrado alegría en comprender las personas, la sociedad, los comportamientos, la cultura y los sistemas. En esta entrevista hablamos sobre el diseño sistémico, el diseño de servicios y el impacto del diseño en la vida de los ciudadanos. Gente, no se trata solo de mover píxeles, el diseño cambia y transforma vidas. Los dejamos con nuestra conversación junto a Alberto Soriano.
Aquí Lace Curbelo en otro episodio más de Command Z Podcast. Sigo todavía en Oslo dando muchas vueltas por acá. Y hoy me encuentro con Alberto Soriano. ¿Cómo te encuentras, Alberto?
Bien, un poco nervioso de hablar en español, pero voy a intentarlo mejor, pero bien.
No te apures. Esto va a ser una de estas entrevistas que a mí me encanta porque la hacemos dual. La hacemos en español y la hacemos en inglés. Así que muchas de las preguntas me van a estar escuchando a mí en español y él las va a estar contestando en inglés. Así que esto va a ser una entrevista Spanglish. Cuéntanos un poco sobre ti, a qué te dedicas, específicamente qué tipo de diseñador eres.
So I'm also a design consultant. I'm working at this agency in Oslo, Kolhaugen Consultancy. Part of my time, I work as a design consultant in what is called the digital sort of studio of the company. But I kind of stretch a little bit across like different disciplines. So I don't call myself like specific designer. I just say designer. So like more broadly. And part of my time, I work as a teacher or formerly like assistant professor at the Oslo School of Architecture and Design, where I studied. And I've been, for the last year, teaching mostly service design in the master's level. So the first sort of the first and second semester of the specialization in service design.
Así que donde más te enfocas, o sea, te consideras un diseñador, en, ¿verdad? En dentro de todos los diferentes aspectos, pero más bien te enfocas en lo que es service design.
Yeah, I think if I were to sort of like specify it, I would say I like to, it's sort of like in the merge between service and, or a systemic approach to service design.
Que eso también vamos a estar tocando un poco sobre la sobre lo que es dentro de la entrevista, pero me gustaría que también hablaras sobre algunos de tus proyectos dentro de los que vi que realmente me resaltaron y los encontré súper interesantes. Está Novae. Cuéntanos un poco de cómo crees que el diseño puede cambiar la manera en que vivimos como sociedad, teniendo en consideración que vivimos a través de pantallas todos los días.
Right, so actually that was like a couple of years ago. It was an interesting task while I was studying, and the task was it was the interaction design course, and we had like two what is it called, like Arduino boards, like these small things to kind of code, and basically the task was like you have to design two objects that are placed in different households, and then they communicate and then they connect or they create some sort of like social interaction between people living in different households. So that way I was working together with a friend and another fellow student, and we both were or had families abroad, like very far, not in Norway. So we sort of like started ideating like what would it be, how could we sort of like through like an object or through design make or reenact this like closeness feeling. So that was sort of like our main principle of like how can we, what is closeness, sort of like unpacking like how do we relate to like the feeling of closeness, and like it's not just like an object that tells you something, but like that you feel that the other person is there and like someone, especially when some of your, you know, like loved ones or like family or whatever are like very far away. So it was a sort of like a nice for us like a project to kind of design of like well, like maybe movement, like people in like the same space, how do you sort of like enact like, you know, like, yeah, when you see the screen and to a certain degree, you know, like the person is like in a space, but you don't see that, I don't know, it's like very like flat in a way. So this object was pre-pandemic, so we didn't have that, or we weren't exposed in that isolation sort of like mode, but we had like FaceTime, right? So we spoke with our families or like friends and whatever through FaceTime. So we wanted to bring a little bit more of like, okay, but besides just seeing their face, like how do you feel like they are in your space, you know? So this object was just like small thing on, then we went into very philosophical and like the stars and like when they got close to each other, they shared like energy and like whatever. So that was the concept of it. So the idea was just like, you know, you have the place, your object in the space, and the same object is placed in someone else's house. And then when that house is in that space, then your object would react to it. And then it just make you feel that someone is in that space. That was a little bit the thought behind of like, okay, how do we bring like closeness into, you know, like maybe you have it here and then maybe you feel when the things are moving because one will track your movement and share it or send it to the other house. And then maybe when they're interacting and when these two parts sort of, it was that two kind of like small, a light and a reflecting part. And when they intersect, like the light will reflect like higher. So it was that feeling of like, oh, like, you know, when you're in the same space and then you just move. And then you realize that then, you know, you're sharing kind of like energy or like space, even though you're not in the same, physically in the same space.
I really like el aspecto de que nosotros vemos las interacciones meramente en el contexto digital. Muchas personas piensan que las interacciones son meramente digitales. ¿Y cómo lograste a través de un objeto físico lograr una interconectividad con los seres humanos, ¿verdad? Con un diseño, ¿verdad? Pensando en lo que es las sensaciones, las emociones. Y es interesante, ¿verdad? Ver cómo podemos sacar lo que son las experiencias de usuario, las interacciones, todos estos conceptos digitales y aplicarlo a la vida real. Por eso fue que me encantó muchísimo tu proyecto. ¿Qué cosas estuviste pensando cuando estabas generando esto? Porque me imagino que tuviste que hacer como un journey map en términos de pensar cuáles son las sensaciones que quiero que las personas, ¿verdad?, sientan cuando están utilizando el producto.
So I think in that one, it was actually coming from a more interactive or like tangible interaction sort of like perspective. We sort of like the text was just like, okay, you create this object. So it was like more into the interaction, how do people interact with that? So we didn't focus that much on like the journey at first and like how it is. But we actually like work on like what kind of emotion we want to provoke or what kind of emotion we want people to have when interacting with this object. So it was a lot about like how did they interact and what kind of emotion is triggered by that interaction. So we had like, I think we had like the feeling of like closeness and like home and I don't fully remember all of them, but we had like five kind of, and then we did like small journeys on what would it be? What if like you touch the object or what if you like hold it and hand it or like reshape it? And then we created like small like journeys. So it was more like a fun project. So it wasn't that like proper research or like in that, it was more like, okay, let's just try to evoke an emotion and like what will those emotions be, like what are the things that for us felt that other interactions like evoke that emotion. And then we sort of like landed into like, okay, the closeness is the one that we want to be like this shared space and just like feeling that you're not alone kind of.
En por esa misma línea, también quisiera como que hablar sobre el impacto, ¿verdad?, que tiene el diseño de servicios en la vida de los ciudadanos, porque justamente estamos hablando de las emociones y cómo, ¿verdad?, podemos provocar ciertas cosas, pero cuando hacemos diseño de servicios estamos tocando un aspecto de la vida de una persona. Háblanos sobre eso.
And another, I've been interested, I think, like when I was towards like graduating in both like mixing having like the service design sort of like background, but then also like the background on like interaction design and how those things back in the time or like back in the day, just a few years ago, they weren't that mixed in the school that I studied. So they were kind of like way like silo. So towards the end of my education, I was interested in like mixing them and like how can we, I'm interested in service design, but sometimes service design projects end up in school and maybe sometimes even in practice, they end up being very intangible. You know, you have like this research and like this insight. They are very like powerful, but they are very intangible. So that makes it hard for us to communicate or for people to understand the impact of the work that we do without feeling it in their bodies. And we thought, like, I was collaborating with a friend. We thought that the interaction could bring that. Based on our previous experiences, like interaction could land from like the sort of all the research and all the impact into something that could be physical, could be digital, whatever, but could be like embodied, basically. This project that we work on mental health. We were interested in like working in healthcare. We had experience in working projects with healthcare, and specifically we want to work with mental health, and we ended up working specifically on stress and anxiety with teenagers. And our initially going into there was like, we want to both like mix these two disciplines and like come up with something that is tangible. Like, we don't know what it'd be. It could be like a physical object. It could be a digital platform or service, with a service design perspective, but like making it more tangible. And what we did, it was like a lot on like understanding, obviously, like through this process, it was a lot of like self sort of like discovery and exploration, and like how do we like manage stress, what is anxiety, like how do like you know, like the biological reaction in our brains, and why did we work with like teenagers and all like these different things, and coping with different things, and yeah, and it was that was an interesting project where even though it was like a heavy sort of like, okay, we might, you know, initially we were gonna work also with depression, but like you can't mix all the things, right? You like, they, even though they're sort of like linked to a certain degree, like you can't treat everything the same. So we landed just like stress and anxiety, and a lot of what we work was with some theory from other places that they have developed in terms of what they call interactive mindfulness meditation.
Okay, can you explain that term?
Yeah, so basically we had a partner that was a therapist that worked with like teenagers, and in that center they were very interested in using alternative sort of treatments, so not just jump directly into medication, and they use a lot of like mindfulness meditation practices, basically a lot of like, you know, like connecting with their body using like breathing exercises and like movement and all that. And then through our research, we found this theory where it's interactive mindfulness meditation is basically, the principle is that you engage your body actively to sort of restore the attention. So like, one, to connect, because a lot of the anxiety sometimes what we get is that we are disconnected with our bodies. So our bodies react to certain external stimuli, and we are not, we don't recognize that sort of like reaction, and then we feel like it is a threat. And then we, you know, like it just, the ball sort of like continues rolling. So a lot of it was like, okay, through an interactive, through engaging your body in a movement, it helps us to sort of like focus on that movement and try to not pursue the thoughts that are threatening or that might seem like, you know, overwhelming. And then it gets like, it was a very interesting topic because it gets into like this theory of like attention restoration sort of like thing, which meaning that basically our attention span is very short. And we just kind of chase like the different things, you know, so like we, like now, even though when everything that is digital and like we are so used to get immediate feedback, our attention is very short.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it was like, okay, combining like the principles of mindfulness meditation, which is a lot of the body and like breathing, to this attention restoration thing, is basically you engage your body, whatever that might be, in a repetitive movement for a long time, and you focus on that, doing that repetitive simple movement for a period of time, and over time that will help you to kind of think more rationally. So that was the principle of our project in terms of like, you know, like it's about like building this self-regulation through engaging your body.
Es algo complejo que necesitamos como yeah. 3 horas más para poder cubrirlo, yeah. Pero me interesa mucho el hecho de que cómo el diseño de servicios literalmente responde a problemas sociales y puede servir como una puerta a mejorar la situación de las personas. Que muchas veces los diseñadores de mi lado, de interacción, de UX, decimos, estamos haciendo esta pantalla, este website, no va a cambiar el mundo. Pero sí, o sea, hay otras disciplinas que sí, no es que son más o menos importantes, sino que trabajan otros aspectos, ¿verdad?, de cómo las personas interactúan con el diseño. Tengo una pregunta un poco controversial para ti. Siempre he tenido esta lucha con los diseñadores cuando me dicen, para poder crecer tu carrera profesional te tienes que especializar.
Yeah.
Entonces tú empiezas como que, no, pues tal vez yo quiero ser un generalista, tal vez yo quiero saber de todo un poco y tal vez quiero ser consultor y trabajar con diferentes tipos de variedad de proyectos para no aburrirme. Y de repente te dicen, sí, pero es que no, porque no vas a lograr llegar a donde tú quieres en un futuro. Es como que, quiero saber tu opinión sobre lo que es ser un generalista dentro de la industria y saber de todo versus especializarte. ¿Qué tú opinas sobre eso?
I think it's very personal. I think in my case, I come from an industrial design background, and sort of like to a certain point, until I was exposed to sort of interaction and service design, I didn't know that they existed basically. And I was like, okay, there's an interest in there. So I went into service design. Basically, I didn't know what it was. I was just like, well, this looks interesting. And like, I don't want to do more product things at this moment, which interaction design, like the first semester was about that. So I was like, okay, I want to do something that is not product. But then later on, I think, I don't think like while like, you know, developing professionally or like in my education, I didn't think that much behind besides service design in the context of here in Norway. I think it's quite developed and quite like established profession, but it's also like very narrow in terms of like for you to kind of work in those projects, you need to speak the language. So while I was studying, I was like, okay, I can't speak the language. So I, but if I, you know, have other competencies or other domains, then I can sort of level or like, yeah, try to compensate my lack of, you know, ability to speak a language. So that's when I went into instruction design initially. So like, okay, I can't, I, this is maybe, you know, like my passion or whatever. But then I can't, or going straight from school won't be like possible because of the language. So then I will compensate it to having all these other things. So I think like a lot of me initially started on that. I'm like, okay, if I am lacking or I'm weak on this thing, like I will compensate it by being more capable to do other things that maybe service designers or like instruction designers, or when they are like more specific on one thing, they don't know. However, obviously, like I, when it comes to, I do have an understanding of like UX and instruction design, but like, for example, like when it comes to details, I'm very like proficient in the discipline, I don't. So I think there are pros and cons on both of them. I think it's, and personally, I don't believe that is you have to do one or the other. I think having the design understanding and background, it is possible to, you have kind of like a universal language to communicate with others. And like to a certain degree, you need to be able to work with others, whether you are a generalist or specialized, sort of like designer. It is sort of like a benefit to be able to collaborate with others without kind of pointing the finger of like, oh, but you are not, so I don't trust your knowledge. That makes sense.
Licencia de aplicaciones móviles. Permite incrustar fuentes en aplicaciones de celulares o tabletas. Cuando se trata de licencias tipográficas para aplicaciones, algunas fundidoras tipográficas ofrecen licencias específicas para aplicaciones móviles, mientras que otras pueden incluir el uso de aplicaciones en sus licencias estándar o con la adquisición de licencias tipo desktop. Otras, por el contrario, facturan de forma mensual según la cantidad de descargas y usuarios de la tipografía. Es necesario, como ya lo hemos dicho anteriormente, leer con detenimiento los términos y condiciones de la licencia para asegurarte de que cubre el uso que deseas hacer de la fuente en tu aplicación. Además, algunas licencias pueden tener limitaciones en el número de descargas o instalaciones de la fuente en diferentes dispositivos. Elegir una fuente tipográfica que cubra tus necesidades y cuya licencia no te mete en problemas puede ser complejo. Recuerda que en nuestro libro Elementype tratamos estos temas con mayor detalle.
Nosotros podemos ayudarte. Escríbenos a plus@tipastype.com. Tipastype, tipografía y licencias.
Me gustó que mencionaste design is like a universal language. Como que es importante también tener eso en perspectiva, que no sepas específicamente de algo no quiere decir que no puedas aportar a un proyecto de diseño dentro de una subcategoría, una subdivisión de lo que es el diseño. Por ejemplo, en mi caso, yo no he trabajado lo que es diseño de servicios así como que súper fuerte. Sí, también he participado en uno que otro proyecto, pero no como un lead o como una persona que está diseñando todo este proyecto. No obstante, sí entiendo, puedo participar. O sea, hay unos principios dentro de lo que es el diseño universal que sí son aplicables. Y es interesante, ¿verdad?, cómo podemos incluso, aunque no seamos expertos, participar. Recientemente te has involucrado en lo que es el diseño sistémico y cómo se relaciona a la literacia de poder. Eso es como una pregunta compleja, pero por ahí vamos. Háblanos sobre eso y por qué es importante para ti la literacia de poder.
I think through that sort of like journey, I moved from like using like the terms that I'm comfortable or that we are comfortable. I think initially was like, yeah, like terms of like power, but I've moved a little bit into terms of what I've been talking about is just like how design, and then specifically like maybe the systemic design, is like how are they entangled in the reproduction of oppression, discrimination, and like all these sort of legacies basically of society that we live in and that we maybe unintentionally we reproduce. So I started basically from like working at my previous company where I was interested, or I felt like the responsibility to be involved in terms of diversity. so like projects or initiatives about diversity. I felt like the responsibility of being one of the persons of color in the company to be part of it. And then it's like, and in my head at that moment, I was like, well, if I'm going to be, you know, in the picture of your website or like on the face of, you know, like a person of color on the website, like I might as well be part of the conversations. So I started moving into that, and like there were like many things going on in there, and then moved from, yeah, like diversity into like how is that related to design. One, I think like there's the workplace conversation in diversity. That's a whole different topic. But then lately it's been design mostly, and specifically systemic design has been because in the company here at Hello Game where I work, they are sort of like known, or Hello Game speaks about being, you know, systemic design leaders, and they're involved in like all the systemic design sort of movement and like being part of like the dominant sort of voices in the context of Norway or in Oslo specifically. So my interest is, it was, why are we not talking about, you know, if systemic design has a primary to work on like social complex systems, why are we not talking about topics of oppression or discrimination and women power? That is like very non-known. And then we like for, over the last like maybe year or 2 years, like there have been reports from like these mainstream power houses of design, like the Design Council and IDEO and like all these Western like companies talking about systemic design as being like, you know, like the savior almost. Like now we move to, it was like maybe service design like a couple of years ago, and like some years before like UX or interaction design, and it's been like that. So now it's like systemic design, that the one that we are going to use to you know, solve all these problems and solve like blah blah blah, blah. But even in that language, reading, I remember reading one of the reports of the Design Council in 2020, I think it was net zero, and it was no conversation about, it was like, for you to be a systemic designer, you have to think about this and this and this and this, and you have to do these things. But there was nothing about like how, what is the power that we have as designers? So that's been like my interest and work on like trying to have that conversation within the community in terms of like, maybe we should be considering about these things. And then you go, you get very like, you know, in the theory and like, yeah, deep down into like questioning design as a whole.
Me parece bien importante lo que estás hablando. Recientemente estuve participando en una conferencia y justamente lo que estábamos hablando es como cada una de tus identidades tiene una presión o un beneficio, y cómo no es lo mismo empezar la carrera de la vida dentro de lo que puede ser siendo parte de la comunidad de color, o siendo mujer, o siendo parte de la comunidad LGBTQ. Y cómo eso, ¿verdad?, tiene una repercusión en cómo, ¿verdad?, nos vemos ante la sociedad. Y lo que mencionaste del web, ¿verdad?, cómo las compañías también utilizan lo que es la imagen, ¿verdad?, y qué es lo que implica tener empleados diversos y representación dentro de las compañías, porque se supone que se toman decisiones informadas bajo la diversidad de empleados que se tienen, ¿verdad? Es un tema que no todo el mundo quiere tocar por obvias razones, pero es importante, ¿verdad? Y creo que esto que estamos hablando sobre el diseño sistémico, ¿verdad?, que es una herramienta para poder apalancarlo. Ya estamos casi entrando en las secciones recurrentes del podcast. Me gustaría conocer un poco sobre tus historias de terror dentro de la industria.
I mean, maybe even related to this, like the last thing that we just talked about, I think, yeah, like just being part of trying to have a conversation with people and like facing, you know, like, yes, we have like diverse, but then looking at like, where is that diversity in part of the company? So it's just not about having people or having the voices, but like where they are or how they are present. So I think, I mean, I have that one. I mean, like, maybe it's too like, yeah, horrific, but it was just like, yeah, like, you know, like having, very visible challenges in terms of like power structures. So like I think Norway is very perceived as like, you know, like we are very progressive to a certain degree, and they are, or like, yeah, it's a very progressive country to a certain extent. But in terms of when it comes to like working culture, like sometimes it's like, oh, this like flat structure and like everyone, you know, you can approach and like all these things, which is kind of like a lie, because I feel like you need to have a structure to a certain degree, and that's fine, and you can acknowledge that. But then using that as a way to a degree, like gaslight, or to not being accountable for the things that they say, or like someone that is in a higher position, not acknowledging that you have that position and the things that you say have a different impact on like people, not just me, but other people. It was like a hard challenge for me, you know, like trying to have a conversation and, yeah, like project allocation or like different things, or like this diversity, or like things that I'm interested in, and then like just getting like some comments made from my direct manager or things like that, that it was like, oh, but, you know, that might be not something that you should say, but it was like, oh, but I didn't mean it, or like, so like, yeah, I think like that's, I don't know why I like ended up coming directly to that. But I think it's just like interesting on how, or maybe pointing in the need of like being more reflective of our position as designers and like the power that we hold, and like how, if we talk about systemic, we are part of the system. We're not like kind of, you know, external to the system. And like, it's a lot of like our systemic self, and like reflecting on how the power that we hold because of the different, you know, like identities that we have, like how we are, yes, maybe discriminated in some ways, but also like privileged in others, and how that in that privilege we also discriminate others.
Lo más que me llevo de todas estas entrevistas ha sido el hecho de que hemos humanizado un poco más el diseño estos últimos años. Ya no estamos hablando de los usuarios como algo tan distante, sino que estamos, ¿verdad?, poniéndolo más en un contexto real. Bueno, ya para finalizar, me gustaría saber de tu parte, ¿a qué le darías Coman Z en el diseño? ¿Qué tú crees que no se debería hacer?
I would say, like, maybe just a little bit provocative. I will say, like, I will do Coman Z to design.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, and yeah, no, to unpack it, but just like, I think like, and it's like last reflection, and like in this journey that I've been doing the last couple of years, is like understanding, like, you know, design thinking. If we look at design thinking for what it was made for, and it's just like, you know, like taking like this natural ability for from people or like humans to like problem solve and create creative thinking and all these things, and just putting it in a profession that is very elitist, and like then to profit from that, and only some people get credited for that, then when should we sort of like advocate for not using design whatsoever?
Interesting point of view. Nada más con eso los dejamos. Muchísimas gracias, Alberto. Yo creo que hay, después de esta entrevista mucha gente nos va a escribir.
I'm sorry about that.
No.
I'm open to, you know, like have, you know, conversations and about it. And I think it's like sometimes just like being a little bit provocative, you get like some interesting reflections from people.
Definitivamente. Yeah. Muchas gracias por compartir con nosotros.
Gracias.
Será hasta la próxima, amigos.
Puede buscar más episodios a través de nuestra página web comanzetapodcast.com o seguirnos a través de Instagram, Twitter, Spotify, Apple Podcasts y Google Podcasts como Coman Z Podcast, o en Facebook como Coman Z Podcast PR. Las opiniones vertidas en este programa son de exclusiva responsabilidad de quienes las emiten y no representan a Coman Z Podcast ni a sus auspiciadores.